from Altoona to Beaver Falls, Bedford to Bloomsburg, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, given its tax and regulatory policies, is Pennsylvania a gamble for any business that might consider locating or expanding here? David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association and our Capital Watch crew are here with the answer. And Pennsylvania's big cities have become enclaves for socialist policies, while the rest of the state grows more conservative. I'll have a town hall commentary on why this trend will define the 2020 election. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The state legislature may not be in session, but various committees are conducting business during the holiday season, including the House Judiciary Committee, which last week approved the proposed Justice Reinvestment Initiative 2. The measure would prioritize correctional resources on violent and dangerous criminals while helping prepare those convicted of lesser crimes for reintegration into society and the workforce. Approved on a bipartisan vote, the plan would build upon the first phase of reforms, which have contributed significantly to a drop in crime and a corresponding drop in the state's prison population. Philadelphia's Court of Common Pleas has once again taken the top spot as the country's worst place to be sued. In a report issued this week by the American Tort Reform Foundation, the report was a searing rebuke of the litigation climate in Philadelphia. The report pointed out that lawyers actually advertise nationally to attract out-of-state clients to file suits in Philadelphia, as that city's judges and juries hand out financial awards far in excess of those in other cities. Kurt Schroeder, executive director of the Pennsylvania Coalition of Civil Justice Reform, labeled the practice litigation tourism and says it exhausts Philadelphia's judicial resources and delays justice for its citizens. President Donald Trump was in Pennsylvania this past week speaking to a rally at Hershey's Giant Arena that was filled to capacity by supporters and left hundreds in the parking lot to watch the event on big screen televisions. Although the U.S. House of Representatives moved toward impeachment that same day, a new Firehouse Optimist December battleground state poll found the president has moved ahead of his potential Democratic opponents in Penn's Woods. His closest competitor was Joe Biden, whom he leads 46-41%. Trump has also moved into a polling lead in Michigan and Wisconsin. Those states, along with Pennsylvania, are seen as a key to winning the 2020 election. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The Fraser Institute's Economic Freedom of North America Index is out, and Pennsylvania ranks a dismal 25th among the states for having those tax and regulatory policies that allow businesses the freedom to prosper. Here to take a look at what's driving that poor performance is our Capital Watch crew. Joining David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association are Matthew Briette from the Commonwealth Partners and Rebecca Euler of the National Federation of Independent Business. Dave?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, Rebecca Euler, Legislative Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. Rebecca, thanks so much for being on the program.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be back.
And also, Matt Briette, President of the Chamber of Entrepreneurs, the Commonwealth Partners. Matt, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on. Good to be with you guys.
Well, it's great to be together. And, you know, as the listeners already understand, the key commonality with all of our, you know, pro-growth organizations is competitiveness. We want it to become the smart business decision for people to choose to locate and invest and hire and expand here in Pennsylvania rather than in one of our competitor states, recognizing, you know, first and foremost, these are all voluntary decisions that people make.
Yeah, this is, I think, when you look at quality of life issues, if you don't have good paying jobs, you don't have opportunities to change jobs because, hey, I can earn more somewhere else. And if you just lack those types of opportunities, you're going to see an overall quality of life decline. So these indices that are put out on whether it's starting a business or the climate from a regulatory standpoint or taxes are really important because, as you know, David, I mean, capital will go to where it's welcome.
Yes.
To hospitable business climates. And so when we look at Pennsylvania, and there's a lot of people doing this, right? I mean, you've got people who are going to spend a lot of money before they spend even more lots of money to open a business or relocate from another state.
They'll spend the money to do the research, to check things out, to make sure they know that they know for sure what they're getting themselves into before we could possibly earn the larger investment of permanent production. And that's why all these analyses are conducted.
Yeah, these are ways to information is money, right? Mm-hmm. It's time. And so we've got a number of indices that show Pennsylvania is not putting out the welcome sign.
And before we get to the new ones, Rebecca, I want you to just please comment. One of the longstanding issues, one of the things we're already familiar with, is that Pennsylvania's rate of entrepreneurship, the small business startup rate, is really terrifyingly low, and that's a danger sign for our whole economy.
Right. I wanted to actually go and get an update and make sure, you know, we're still at the bottom. So I wanted to check up on the Kauffman indicators of entrepreneurship in Pennsylvania before I came in here. And as with any list with Pennsylvania, as we're talking about these indices, I realized as I was taking a look there that when I get on these websites and I'm automatically scrolling down to the bottom to find Pennsylvania. And that was definitely the case here with the index of entrepreneurship. PA is one of the lowest rates for new entrepreneurs, 47th overall. And it also ranks 49th, second to last for job creation for startups. And I think everyone realizes that entrepreneurs are really the energy of the economy. They're really what gets things moving, injects capital and energy into the economy. We really need to encourage startups. And further than that, small businesses, which most of these entrepreneurs start out as small businesses, obviously, small businesses create 2 out of every 3 new jobs. So getting to Matt's point about having job opportunities available as a part of a quality of life assurance, small businesses and entrepreneurs are a huge part of that. And we really need to do everything we can to encourage them.
Entrepreneurs are the folks that I represent. And so many of them say, look, if I wanted to start my business that I started 20, 30, 40 years ago today. The regulatory burden, the tax burden.
Lawsuit abuse.
The challenges, the legal environment, all of these things, they say, I don't know if I could do it. I don't know if, you know, government is no longer a partner in this. They're an opponent. They make these things very difficult. Instead of clearing out roadblocks, they're setting them up, throwing down the nails in the roadway.
Yes.
And this is where, you know, along the lines of what Rebecca's pointed out there, the entrepreneurship, these other indices paint a similarly gloomy picture. For example, Wallet Hub's best states to start a business. So this would be along the same lines. They put us at 45th. So we're talking bottom of the barrel. Then you have the Tax Foundation's state business tax climate. They have us up at 29th. Now, of course, taxes are one, you know, important factor,
right.
But it's not the totality.
Well, and
right?
also those indexes, those ratings, give us an awful lot of credit for having uniform rates, that Pennsylvania does not have escalating rates, but that's because of our state constitution and the uniformity clause. So insofar as those rankings give us an awful lot of credit for that, nobody in Harrisburg today is responsible for that.
Well, and of course, when we look at some of those flat rates, like our personal income tax, 3.07%. But we also, all of us, I'm sure, are also paying a local income tax.
Right.
And that is an average of 1.21% across the state. So it's the same taxpayer, right?
Correct.
I mean, the state taxpayer is the federal taxpayer, is the local taxpayer. So when you factor it all in, we're actually up at 4.25%.
Yes.
When it comes to the income tax that we pay as people.
Yes.
But then, of course, you've got all the other taxes that get larded on, whether it's an occupation tax, an EMS tax, and these things add up in Pennsylvania. And I think it's why you see a tax burden in Pennsylvania that's pretty high, particularly with our competitor states.
And it's not just the amount or the level of taxes, it's the complexity of the tax system too, which I think really sets us behind.
Cost of compliance.
Right. And we're one of the few states that actually collects local income taxes on top of all of those other taxes that you just listed, mm-hmm. Matt. The cost of compliance is through the roof because of the complexity.
Yeah, and one other indice that I think is important in this mix, then I'd like to talk about one that looked at cities and where Pennsylvania's biggest cities compare. But the Fraser Institute, which is up in Canada, they do a economic freedom of North America index. So you're looking at the U.S., Canada, Mexico. We were 25th. So we're 25th amongst
all the states and provinces of all three countries.
Right. So again, of course, we got to look at our competitors. But this kind of puts Pennsylvania, I mean, at best, we're middle of the pack, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, all of these, at worst, we're at the bottom of the barrel, which shows that we have a tremendous opportunity to become much more hospitable.
Exactly. And this goes to the dynamic we've seen year after year, decade after decade, where Pennsylvania's economic growth is only ever a fraction of the national average. And that if we were able to just, you know, how sad is it that we aspire to mediocrity? If we could just perform at the national average, we'd be much further ahead than we are. And for example, of course, you know, population growth is closely related to economic growth.
Yeah.
And then as we go into the 2020 census, Pennsylvania is projected to lose yet another seat in the U.S. House of Representatives. Like, well, how do you turn that around? The only way to turn that around is with population growth, and that can only come from economic growth.
Well, and this is where it's very easy to go the direction of California, Connecticut, Illinois. It can be very difficult to make the tough decisions.
Right.
And those relate to, you know, curtailing spending and keeping taxes low and make some hard decisions, right? But that's the challenge. That's the opportunity. Pennsylvania still has that in front of us, right? I mean, some of these other states, California, New York, Illinois, they are probably looking at bankruptcy at some point here in the near future. And that's not where you want to be. It's very difficult to pull yourself out of that kind of nosedive.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me on the program, Matt Briette from Commonwealth Partners and Rebecca Euler from NFIB Pennsylvania.
Well, Dave, one other index that looked at 115 cities in Canada, the U.S., and Mexico was rating things of how doing business in these localities. And this is where, Pennsylvania cities, Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, did not fare very well.
And again, Pennsylvania cannot thrive if our great urban centers are not performing well. I mean, that's just whether we like it or not, whether we believe it or not, we are all in this together.
That's right. And those cities out of the 115 that were looked at, Philadelphia ranked 61st and Pittsburgh was 60th. So middle of the pack at best. Pittsburgh is 75th. And Philadelphia is 76. So kind of looking at those barriers for starting a business. One of the bright spots for us, and I know you'll appreciate this, David, is getting electricity, right?
Right.
I mean, that's one of those things that we take it for granted. We flip the lights and they turn on.
Yes.
It's amazing what happens. Pittsburgh is number one.
That's
ding, ding,
fantastic.
Ding, ding.
Woo!
Yes. Yeah. And Philadelphia is number 11 because it is still a beneficiary of all of the energy production in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
And our competitive markets for electricity.
That's right. And those things, I am sure that those are what lift us up to 60th and 61st, because when it gets down to things like registering property, we are at the very bottom. Philadelphia is 115th and Pittsburgh is 113th. And these are some of the challenges of running a business, paying taxes. Oh, Philadelphia is 91st and Pittsburgh is 95th.
So, good Lord.
Yeah. So these are
how many?
Yeah, out of 115. So we're, again, near the very bottom. One of the things that these cities do have is employing workers. We're in the mid-30s for both of those cities. So you can see that there are some serious challenges and opportunities for improvement. But like you said, David, we need to have our urban centers as booming places.
How do we find a way forward to improve these things? And at every level of government, whether it's, you know, city or county or state or federal, I mean, the first and most necessary step is spending restraint.
Yeah.
To have fiscal discipline and to not spend more than is taken in, and to look to the horizon and to make sure that all of your accounts are actuarially sound, and also I would argue to prioritize tax relief at the same level as new spending.
Well, the Fraser Institute identified Pennsylvania's biggest failure was government spending. Mm. And in particular, it is the locking in, or what is locked in, mandatory spending. Our pension liabilities.
Right.
In 2018, we spent $7 billion across the state,
yeah,
just on our pension liabilities.
$7,000 so, yeah. million. Dollars.
And that doesn't even come close to mitigating the overall liabilities that are $60, $70 billion that we're looking at. These are things that are sort of on auto spend because we've made promises. We're not taking them back. And unless we address other areas of spending where it's not mandated, we're going to continue to see increases.
And what I think people need to understand here is that so Pennsylvania is now the fifth most populous state in America. It's not because we grew.
Yeah.
It's because hundreds of thousands of people fled Illinois.
Right.
Because of Illinois's deeply dysfunctional political and economic situation. But part of that is that when people leave, which they're free to do, this is America, you move to a different state, you, the citizen, the taxpayer, leave behind your share of the debt obligation in that state.
Yeah.
When people vote with their feet, it makes these financial problems worse to the point where it may not be able to ever – like you said, these places may be on a path to bankruptcy.
Yeah. Well, and the good news is that, look, we've got some major cities across the country that are not unlike Pittsburgh and Philadelphia that are doing some things right. For example, you could take Columbus, Ohio. They are ranked 14th. Again, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, we're talking 60th and 61st. Columbus, Ohio isn't that different than some of our cities in Pennsylvania, yet they're at 14. And then, of course, you've got states. Oklahoma City is number one on this list. And you've got Boise, Idaho. Atlanta, Georgia is fifth. You've got some cities, very large cities, that are doing things right.
Those are all states, I think, that have experienced that population growth that David was talking about. They're where the people from Illinois are going, you know. So how do we bring people to Pennsylvania cities like that?
We have a culture in a lot of our government agencies, not of partnership, but of sort of the gotcha mentality, mm-hmm, that some of the regulators, whether it's the Department of Environmental Protection or LNI, labor and industry, that they don't look at businesses as, you know what, I want to help foster your growth, but they say, I know you're doing something wrong and I'm going to find it.
Yes.
And penalize you for it.
Yeah, that's right. And I've heard that from more people that have operations, not just in Pennsylvania, but other states. They say there is just a culture of hostility amongst government bureaucrats that don't view their job as helping facilitate economic growth, but to somehow hinder it, or to that they don't get good marks on their report card unless they've penalized or fined people or found them doing something wrong. And to me, that's part of that's a cultural mindset that has to come from our governor, his secretaries, his or her secretaries, and then throughout the bureaucracies, that we change how we approach things and view job creators and entrepreneurs.
Yeah, the relationship between the Commonwealth and our other governments and the productive sector. I mean, I know this isn't unique to Pennsylvania, but I do think it really is especially noticeable in Pennsylvania that because, 120 years ago, that Pennsylvania steel and coal and rail ruled the world, that to Harrisburg just looked like this big never-ending river of money, and no matter how many times you duck the bucket into the river, that it would continue to flow. And that's just not the case. That talent and capital is more mobile than it has ever been, and so our leaders do this at their peril, but they do it anyway because it's what they're accustomed to. And I think that it goes to show, like the compare and contrast would be, look at the way that state government chased a potential investment from Amazon. You know, they were going to back the Brinks truck up to the home of Jeff Bezos, the world's richest man. But at the same time, we have this inherent domestic organic opportunity with natural gas and the natural gas byproducts. But the mentality in Harrisburg is, let's just tax the living daylights out of it.
Well, and as we're seeing, when marketplaces go down, that tax revenue is not going to be there.
Correct.
So don't make tax policy on the sunshine days today. You ought to be looking for the long term and developing something that fosters growth for the long term.
Yes. Caution and prudence and discipline, all these old virtues that may go unnoticed when present, but they're unmistakable when absent. So anyway, well, thank you both for being part of this conversation today and for the ongoing efforts that you make towards improving Pennsylvania's competitiveness so that we can get more of the jobs, of the prosperity and opportunity for people in our Commonwealth.
Well, and it's not too late. We can start doing that right now.
Yes, sir. Amen to that.
Keep
trying. Amen
to
that. So, Matt, where can people go to learn more about you and your organization and the work that you're doing?
Yeah, go to thecommonwealthpartners.com.
Excellent. And Rebecca, where can people go to find you?
They can find us at nfib.com/PA or on Facebook or Twitter.
Excellent. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. So from Matt and Rebecca and me, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. In 1992, then Arkansas Governor Bill Clinton ran for president as a centrist Democrat with an eye toward capturing what was at the time a much larger moderate section of the electorate. It worked. He won. He declared over the era of big government. Today, the era of big government is alive and thriving, and his party has moved into a full embrace of socialism, although they attempt to soften its image by calling it democratic socialism. Bill Clinton's brand of moderation would not stand a snowball's chance in today's Democratic Party. Here in Penn's Woods, where once Democrats positioned themselves as champions of the working class, ultra-left-wing giveaway programs have replaced economic advancement as the principal focus of the party's policy agenda. Governor Tom Wolf, crowned by the Huffington Post as the most liberal governor in America, has certainly lived up to that reputation. In just the last year, he has taken steps to embroil Pennsylvania in a draconian multi-state agreement purporting to address so-called climate change, proposed restrictions on Second Amendment gun rights, unilaterally overspent the state budget, and vetoed legislation protecting unborn babies with Down syndrome. But the governor is not alone in taking a hard left turn. The state's big city mayors are right there with him, pandering to the party's radical base while proposing job-crushing policies, violating constitutional rights, and abandoning common sense. Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto stoked the crowd at something called the Climate Action Summit by announcing his opposition to any additional petrochemical cracker plants in the region. Setting aside the fact that neither the plant currently being constructed in Beaver County nor any contemplated plant would be built in the city of Pittsburgh, Peduto railed against fracking and the perceived evils of carbon-based fuels. The problem is, the plant being built by Royal Dutch Shell, as with development of the fracking industry as a whole, have literally created tens of thousands of family-sustaining jobs for the blue-collar constituency formerly courted by Democratic politicians. The damage done by Peduto's comments drew a rare rebuke from Allegheny County Executive Rich Fitzgerald, who told KDK Radio, quote, "No city has benefited more from the Shell Revolution than the city of Pittsburgh, not just the county, but the entire region," end quote. A number of area labor leaders, whose members are experiencing the best jobs of their lives from Shell-related development, also joined in denouncing Peduto's comments. Peduto, along with his Pittsburgh City Council allies, have also made headlines for their efforts to violate the Second Amendment constitutional rights of city residents. In the wake of the tragic shooting at the Tree of Life Synagogue last year, council pushed through and Peduto signed three controversial measures into law. The laws were immediately challenged in court, where defenders of Second Amendment rights correctly argue they are unconstitutional. In what could be considered an electoral rebuke of Peduto's far-left policies and the rush to socialism within the Democratic Party, the counties outside of Allegheny in the Pittsburgh media market turned bright red in last November's election. Republicans flipped control of county courthouses in Westmoreland, Washington, Greene, and Armstrong counties, while Fayette, Butler, and Beaver remained in the GOP camp. Meanwhile, across the state, Philadelphia Mayor Bill Kenney literally flies the flag for socialism. In celebration of the 70th anniversary of the coming to power of Mao Zedong and his Communist Party in China, the Chinese flag was hoisted at City Hall. This was done in fealty to diversity, although how honoring a brutal regime that has murdered millions celebrates diversity remains a mystery. The far-left tilt of Pennsylvania's two big city mayors underscores the growing geographic and ideological chasm in the state's political landscape. Our urban areas have politically become socialist enclaves, while more rural areas grow more conservative. Leading Democratic presidential candidates include outright socialists, while Donald Trump's economic populism prevails in the Republican Party. Thus, the upcoming presidential election is not just your typical battle between Republicans and Democrats. It will pit democratic socialism against capitalism in what will be a pitched battle for the economic soul of America. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WRDV-FM in Warminster, WRRN-FM and WKNB-FM in Warren, along with WCHE-AM in Westchester, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville. All of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
We'll be right back.